Hello and welcome to The Game Is About Glory. I'm your host, Steph, and joining me are Ricky and Milo. Hello, chaps.
Hi, Steph.
Evening, Steph.
Yes, indeed. Well, Newcastle. We'll be looking back at yesterday's defeat on Tyneside, but what we won't be doing is getting over-emotional about it all, because we think it offers a great chance to assess this Ange journey, where we are and how far away we are from where Ange wants us to be. And look, you know us over here. We're not into overreactionary pylons, not our game, but we do love a bit of a holistic overview with the odd polite disagreement. Isn't that right, chaps?
I was just out before we started, joined this call, started this evening. I've been reacquainting myself with Arsenal Fan TV, which there were less polite disagreements on there. I don't know about you guys. I was an avid fan up until a few years ago, and I think it's gone right downhill. But
yeah,
this week,
I agree.
This week it's right back. Is
it a return
back
to form?
His best? So yeah, no, it's fantastic.
I have to say, it's so good that you mentioned it, because the thought did creep in for the first time in well over a year that it might be worth a peek.
Yeah,
I actually thought that the final whistle of that game, which, by the way, if you don't know, Arsenal lost to Aston Villa 2-0 at home. So, good, excellent. All getting
practice
a bit shouty,
best.
Were they?
Yeah.
By the way, wasn't it amazing how the fire drill seems to happen at the same time every year at the Emirates, doesn't it? Was that unbelievable? They were 2-0 down. It was less. That was still 85 minutes on the clock, and it was half empty. Yeah.
I did tell you, so it's the schools are back tomorrow, so the Ashburton Army had to get home and have a bath and an early night before going back to school. So,
I think there was a similar one last year, wasn't there? Jimmy do that kind of aerial shot, didn't they, of outside the stadium,
right,
and there's just thousands.
As I looked at the stands and they were empty, I wondered, are we going to get that same aerial shot? And what I realised is someone somewhere has obviously said to the TV companies, the next fire drill that we have in this situation, don't show that shot again. Don't do it again. Just because, I mean, it was primed to be shown, wasn't it? I mean, anyway.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, with the amount of injury time you get these days, and also, I mean, the rest of their season has been pretty damn good. And to like think one bit of adversity and they're just on their toes
pathetic. Straight
away. It's just,
I mean, absolutely pathetic. I mean, I just can't. I more fool me. I couldn't believe it. But really, no. I mean, I should have known all along, right? As Milo said, there are bedtimes, you know, to be had and so on. Anyway, a little bit of joy, shall we say, in the weekend. And there was more joy, actually, it has to be said, for the mighty Tottenham Hotspur. Because before we get into Newcastle, we should take a minute to salute Spurs women, who beat Leicester City in added time on Sunday to reach the FA Cup final. Brilliant. Great stuff. Leicester took the lead on 12 minutes. Jessica Naz brought us level on 83 minutes. And Martha Thomas booked our place at Wembley in the 118th minute at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as well. What a great thing. We will face Manchester United in the final on 12th of May. Good stuff, eh? Good stuff.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, really good. Really good. And, United are only a couple of places ahead of us in the league. So,
yeah, it was good. Good they beat Chelsea, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd much rather be playing United than Chelsea in the final. So, yeah. I think it's fantastic. I mean, you know, it's our first FA Cup final since 91 as a club, and it's obviously the women's first ever one. But, yeah, fantastic result. And they've had a really good season, and they're playing some great football. So it's fantastic to see.
What was more remarkable is I'd actually tuned in late to this, and usually I'm a massive jinx when I do that kind of thing, but this time it was the other way around. I got there for the last 7-8 minutes, and lovely header. Header.
Yeah.
Jumped out. Outjumped the defender. Beautiful.
Just Naz's goal is fantastic as well.
Yeah,
really,
it was.
Really good goal.
Isaac-like.
Oh, well, you that's it. You've threaded us in now. Now,
sorry.
Now we're heading up.
Do you want me to kick him out
so
we can just have the two of us? That's out of order. Well, sorry, what I would like to say is, Steph, so welcome back after a few weeks off.
Thank you.
I brought us 7 points over the last couple of weeks, and then you come back and we've got this shower of shit to talk about. So,
I
thought yesterday afternoon you might be looking for air flights away so you could dodge this one.
Yeah. See, it's interesting how we all look at it. I like to think that my being at the last three games was where the 7 points came, because I was in the stadium.
That's what it is.
So yeah, I think Daniel needs to put, invest in my travel for the rest of the season, so as we can ensure that fourth place. Right? It's obvious, isn't it? It's obvious.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, okay. Newcastle. Deep breath. Get a great curry in Newcastle. I believe you've been spending a lot of time up there, haven't you, Milo?
Yeah, I go there quite a lot.
Great part of the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Great part of the world. And I have to say, I've always had a great time going up there regardless. Hasn't been so kind to us the last couple of seasons. In a nutshell, what did you think of the game? Who wants to pick it up? Who wants to kick us off? Ricky, you just looked at me. Go on,
me.
You kick it off.
Oh, yeah, you kick it off. Well, in a nutshell, I think we was good up to the first goal, which was about 30 minutes, I think. But then, but beyond that, pretty god-awful, I thought. That's it.
I agree. And kind of that first 30 minutes, I thought it was reasonably even. I thought the game reminded me quite a bit of the Fulham game, where Newcastle were, you know, standing off but close to our midfield and make it very difficult for us to play out. And as a result of that, you know, Vic kept pumping it long, which, you know, long balls are always a bit of a lottery as to whether you're going to win it or the other team are. And, you know, with Newcastle, you know, they're going to pump it long and chase balls in behind our defence. And I think as a result of that, the game became quite transitional, which I think plays into Newcastle's hands. And then, you know, a couple of mistakes and we're 2-0 down. And I think at that point, the game's effectively over. You know, we have to push up more. And then they hit us on the break again for the third. And yeah, the game's over at that point. Yeah, two, three stupid mistakes really for the first two goals. And, you know, it's disappointing, really disappointing. Just, I mean, the only other thing that occurred to me, I think, you know, I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit more, but actually, no, scrap it there. I'll leave it there. I'll come back to that later.
You're getting
on.
Out of the shell and going into the full basket of nuts there. My nutshell view, in a nutshell, individual mistakes plus missed opportunities plus soft refereeing plus a slight lack of conviction that I think we've had, you know, going forward with the ball, plus a very, very well executed plan from Eddie Howe equaled a game that didn't feel like it was quite as bad in the end as it looked on paper. We'll get into that. It's not a good day, but I think there are a lot of fine margins.
Mm-hmm.
That on another day flip this game and we end up with a completely different situation. So
yeah, I think that's right. I think I rewatched the game last night, and I think it's good to do that, because yeah, when you watch it through first time, you've got emotion, and obviously you don't know what's going to come. You're living very much in the moment, and then I think, you know, towards the end of a game, your view gets kind of clouded by the result or the, you know, the latter half of the game in terms of the performance. And I found watching particularly the first half again, on the second viewing, I thought it was a lot better than I had at the end of the game when I watched it in real time and live. And, you know, that's not to say it was a good performance. It wasn't, for all the reasons, you know, you say, Steph, but I don't think it was a foregone conclusion that the game ended up like that. And if we'd taken our chances earlier in the game, then it could have ended up very differently. And as you said, you know, individual mistakes cost us. But
one more thing we must all unite on before we look at the team selection. My God, I mean, that shirt. Look, I freely admit I looked at it in the shop a couple of weeks ago and I thought, it doesn't look as bad in person. And I'm like, on principle, I cannot allow myself to be victimized by buying it, even though I think it looks okay. And it just, look, it doesn't look okay on our players. It's not performing well. I can only think, I think we've only got 2 points in it this season, right? I mean, let's just bin it off. Let's get rid of that shirt, right? I mean, psychologically, I have to say, you do when you see us, that when you say we're going to start with that shirt, you do feel a little bit like, right? I mean, you just do.
I mean, like, and this is coming from someone who bought the wetsuit last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is coming from someone who will buy any shirt foisted at them, pretty much.
I mean, my biggest criticism of, I mean, I don't like it, but I mean, my biggest criticism of it in this game is I thought, for a TV viewer, I thought there wasn't enough contrast between the two kits. And if I had a you know, people who have some visual impairments where it can make it difficult to differentiate. I thought it was a really poor choice, and I think either of our other kits would have been would have been better than that one. I mean, it's ugly. It's an ugly kit, basically.
Yeah, and but we should actually pay just a little bit of just for a moment. This might be a little bit tongue in cheek. Newcastle had those haptic shirts yesterday, which, by the way, I think is a brilliant, brilliant idea. I mean, what a great thing. It's basically, if you didn't know, they have a haptic shirt that for the hard of hearing and the deaf allowed every time a goal was scored, the shirt would vibrate, sort of give you a little bit of a sensation, like kind of, I don't know, an extra sensory dimension that, you know, to just make things more fun. And I will say, I mean, not that I like to see goals scored against us, obviously, but it was seeing all those kids in those haptic shirts, you know, just the smiles on their faces were really, you know, it was nice to see. And I think that we should be applauded as a club for doing our bit to help those kids enjoy those shirts as much as they did.
By letting them score four.
Tongue in cheek there. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Do you want something similar for when Eric Dyer grows a particularly good carrot or something like that?
Oh, dear. If only people knew. If only people knew the roots to that particular comment. But in a nutshell, yes, I do. Anyway, the only change that we had to the starting lineup from the Forest game was that Benteke came in for Saar. It's a rotation, you know, that we've seen regularly. Were you both happy with it? What about the selection in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think Saar and Benteke is the only change we're seeing most weeks now, isn't it? And I think as it happens, Saar's athleticism might have been more useful in this game in the way that Newcastle were playing, but. Yeah, before kickoff, I was pretty happy with it. I think Benteke's been playing pretty well of late. And, you know, I was expecting Newcastle to sit deep and hit us on the break, which is, you know, pretty much how they played. And generally speaking, our assumption is that Benteke's the better choice when we're going to have more of the ball. It just didn't really work out like that. But, yeah.
Yeah. I think Ange said before, when we had all their injury problems, I think he was dreaming of a Bentancur-Bissouma pairing. So sometimes when you know you've still got that in the back of your mind, you're kind of wanting things like that to work, even if you've been trying it a bit and it's not completely coming together, whether that's individually or as a pair. But I think Saar always does really, it's so easy to like Saar, isn't it? Because when he plays, he just covers the grass so well, and he almost kind of plays his own game, but it is still a team game, if you know what I mean. And we don't really have a player like him particularly, but and I thought Bentancur yesterday was it felt to me like he was following the game around rather than because usually he's on the other side of that. He's more like wanting to control the game, control some of the direction of the game, the flow. And it just felt like, I wouldn't say it was passing him by, but he was, because he will try everything to get involved as much as he can. But it just seemed like it wasn't working for him in one way or another.
I think there's definitely something, we're not able to find the balance in midfield. I mean, we haven't been for a while, and it's a conundrum that, you know, I'm not sure rests with any one player more than the other, but it affects everyone who comes in. I mean, I think Madders has probably got away with the spotlight in that sense a little more than, you know, perhaps Bissouma's been in that spotlight, you know, Bentancur. But, you know, there's no doubt that Madders is fighting his way through trying to find some rhythm and trying to find some form. And I just think that so much of what they do, you know, it keys off him. He's such a leader. You know, his inability to find that rhythm consistently, I think, throws everyone off a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. We're in a place where they're all trying to find the click. But I think, you know, there's no one that's maybe finding it any worse than the others. They're all culpable, you know.
And I think Madison's key there, because he's, you know, certainly earlier in the season, he was so reliably the outlet from that. So if we were in trouble, if you find Madison, he's going to beat his man, he's going to find the pass, whatever. Yes. He gives us an outlet, he relieves the pressure. And at the moment, yeah, it's just not quite happening. And I think, you know, again, if we look at this game, you know, we talked about the individual mistakes, but I think everyone was just, a percent or two off where they need to be. And for this system and this style of play to work, it's a team approach. Everyone needs to be on their game. And I think collectively, everyone was just a little bit off, a little bit too slow, not quite crisp enough, not quite clean enough in how they were playing.
Yeah.
yeah, not maybe the awareness isn't there. Everything was just a little bit off, and then it starts looking a bit pedestrian because those chances aren't coming off. It's not as crisp. It's not as direct. It's not as threatening. Not as dangerous. And I think that was the problem yesterday. We just all had a bad day.
I mean, if you do rewatch the first 30 minutes, I actually thought Maddison played quite well yesterday in those first 30 minutes. He was not coming as deep as often, and he was doing a lot more of his finding that ball between the lines, doing some twisting and turning and trying to play those kind of clever balls like he was probably earlier in the season. But I think then, because they then scored, it just knocked the stuffing, and because the two goals came along very quickly, it just knocked the stuffing out of us. And I think that's one other thing that's maybe a bit different. I think maybe our confidence is just a little bit, has waned a little bit, and I'm not sure whether that's because I think initially Ange turns up, it's a whole new start, everyone's re-energized, everyone's loving having a new voice, and also any manager that's going to tell you to play the way that we were playing, everyone's going to be so up to that. And I think also Angie's message of I will shoulder everything, I'll take the blame for this, it's almost like making me feel like maybe the players have forgotten that a bit now, because we're not just taking as many risks, and it's our patterns just aren't with confidence anymore. We're playing a lot more safer, and it's almost like, do you know when we first started doing that a little bit again, do you remember that Wolves game away? And we said those players aren't going to play next week because Ange, they're not doing what Ange says. And it almost feels like that was like a rare occasion of it. And now it almost feels like we have a few games where we're just not kind of on it as much. And whether that's through tiredness or lack of confidence or, I don't know, sometimes I do think it could just be the emotion of that uplift. When you're emotional, that can carry you through. You can carry you through on a wave. And I think sometimes when that emotion drains a bit just because things become more normalised, sometimes you haven't got that kind of energy. To be honest, it might be a bit similar to what might happen at Liverpool. They had the wave of Klopp saying he's going to leave and the massive emotional kind of whatever. And now it looks like they're kind of, maybe.
We're queuing up to answer you. I see Milo's got his hand in the air, so off you go, and then I'll come in afterwards.
Yeah, I was going to give you the perfect segue, so maybe I'll hold back.
Okay, yeah. I mean, the segue into the post-match presser, which I think it's... I've got to say, it's sort of like when you first go and start working out again, and you work out really hard, right? Yeah. The muscles get sore, and then suddenly you're like, "Whoa, I don't know if I should be pushing quite that hard." And the trainer will say to you, "Yeah, keep pushing, push through it. That's your lactic acid. Push through that pain barrier. It's okay." And then you'll come out the other side, and you'll be way stronger. Yeah, but you've got to push through that. It feels like we're in that stage, and it feels like the players are in that stage of this journey. That's what it feels like to me, but I'll hand the segue over to tomorrow.
So one of the things Andrew's talked about, I think it's in his book, but I'm sure he's talked about it in press conferences as well since he's been with us, is that, he's talked about how, kind of the difficulty of getting his ideas across to players and that kind of that journey. And one of the things he says is that there's a stage where, he works out who believes in it and who doesn't, and who can play without fear and who can't.
Yeah.
And, I think this is one of the reasons why, on the whole, some of the older players have been moved on, because they, invariably as your career develops, you get that fear, or you get worried about making a mistake. And, we've seen this in the club in the past, where you think, Poch's side early on was, Young came through as a group, they played without fear. Those same players later in their career, the ones who hung around, actually did have that doubt, and you could see them, collapse under the pressure sometimes. And I think what we're going through at the moment is a period of, Ange working out who gets it and who doesn't, who can play through who doesn't, who's buying into what he wants, who isn't. And, that's not something that was going to get sorted in, a window or two. I think, what happens in this summer is going to be really telling as to, who stays around and who doesn't. I suspect that we'll probably be surprised about a couple of players who get moved on, who maybe we thought were, part of that, and, who maybe aren't. And I think that, that will continue. I'm sure that we'll see, wholesale changes over the next couple of summers. And I just think this is part of that process.
So are you saying then that earlier in the season, everyone was just carried away on that big wave of whatever, and then as things are normalised, some people will generally have those characteristics about them,
absolutely,
and then some of the other players won't?
Well, I'll go back to the gym the gym thing. I mean, everyone makes a New Year resolution. I'm going to lose a bunch of weight. I'm going to go to the gym. And then some people get the high of the gym rush, and they go in for six, seven, you know, 6 weeks or so, you know, it's all fantastic. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're not quite getting the results that they want as quickly as they did. You know, the 3-0s are becoming like 2-1s with last minute winners, and it's all getting a little tiring and like, oh dear. And like, you know, and in muscle terms, again, I go back to that ache, and you've got to push through, and it's got to be a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle change. And we're in the middle as a football club. I think the journey that Ange is trying to bring us on is a lifestyle change. And I think that's what, I think that's what Milo's saying. And I hope so, because that's what I'm agreeing with.
Yeah. I mean, there's the theory, isn't there, around, kind of how teams grow. This is not just sporting. This is kind of, you know, work teams as well. It's a psychologist called Bruce Tuckerman who came up with forming, storming, norming, and performing as the stages that teams go through. And
crikey, what was that middle one? Did you say norming?
Norming. So basically you kind of set your standards, basically. So okay. you get to know each other. You've got an early peak, then it kind of plateaus, and then after that you go on to performing really, really, really well. And I think we're probably in that, you know, norming stage at the moment, maybe. And
it makes total sense. Yeah, I mean, I am in agreement with you, because we agree on the same thing. I think that's the case. And actually, just to tie it in before we carry on, and hope I'm not cutting you off, Ricky, but I'm just going to get in this quote from Ange in his post-match presser, which was, he said in reaction, he said, "It's not the first time it's happened to us, and it won't be the last. It's part of our growth. Sometimes that growth is painful. That's part of it. You just got to embrace it, use it, and get ready for the next challenge." So, yeah, I mean, we're saying, do you agree? I mean, I think we are in agreement with this, right? I mean,
And I think, you know, what's really important to remember, this is something I trot out every few months, so I apologize to everyone for me repeating myself, but, you know, progress isn't linear. It's not a straight line. It's not time, you know, it's not time on one axis and getting better on the other. There's ups and downs along the way. And, you know, the overall trend has to be better. And I think, you know, at the moment, I'm seeing quite a lot of our fans having doubts. Maybe I think it's been growing over the last few months, but having doubts about, I don't know, sorry, I'm going to use the word project. I hate the word project around football, but, you know, around the projects, around what we're trying to do here. And
you just gulped because you had to use the word project, didn't you?
Well, you know,
it's all right. We won't tell anyone. We can whisper it between us.
You know, I couldn't find a better word, so I'll have to go with it. I mean, you know, people are having doubts about this for the first time, I think, or, you know, over the last few weeks, and you know, maybe some of the players are going through the same thing, thinking, you know, actually, you know, is this taking us where we want to go? Is this, you know, doing what we want to do? Are they kind of, you know, some of them kind of second guessing stuff and what have you. And I would say that, you know, the overall trend is upwards. And, you know, if you look at where we were a year ago, we're way better to watch. We're playing way better. You know, we are having to grind out results, but even the best teams in the league have to grind out results sometimes, you know. And if you look at, you know, even just this weekend's results, you know, Liverpool chasing the title have gone and lost to Palace. You know, Arsenal have lost to Villa at home today. And these are kind of teams that we're trying to aspire to be in the kind of same conversation as. And they've gone and, you know, lost, you know, to Palace, you know, a worse team than we lost to. And in Villa, probably, you know, a close equivalent. They're not too far away, Newcastle and Villa, in terms of quality, I would say. Right. And
in Liverpool's case, they got walloped 3-0 midweek in Europe as well. So, I mean, it happens. It happens to the best. It does. There's no doubt. And
Arsenal got ripped apart on the counter by a team. You know, it's not as if in midweek. So,
well, P.S., it could have been 4-0 today. I mean, you consider Aston Villa have hit the woodwork twice, and each time in the most can consider that they certainly didn't get the luck of the rebound, did they, the way it went? Mm. So, I mean, I think it's, you know, we discussed this. Maybe we discussed it just between us. I'm not sure. But you came up, Milo, with a really good point, which is that maybe a lot of what people say we should be doing is based on this inability to understand what football has become.
I didn't quite put it like that. I mean,
didn't you? I think you thought. Yeah, everyone is thick and they don't get. and everyone's
probably,
a Luddite.
I probably have said that at some point, but
You made a great point, and I want to drag it out of you because I think it's relevant.
What I was saying is that I think some of the criticism about kind of criticism of how we're playing against low block teams, I think, is a frustration about kind of modern tactics and there's a nostalgia to kind of more open football, which doesn't really happen anymore. There isn't that. And, if you're a good team, then, most teams are going to try and, from mid-table down, most of those teams are going to try and play compact and then hit you on the break. Yeah. And, it's down to the good team to try and find ways through that. Yeah. And obviously,
it's a different world. Yeah.
Obviously, in the earlier stages of ball recovery, if you can get the ball ball forward quickly when they've overcommitted and you can catch them in transition between, kind of having men forwards and dropping into a low block, then great. But if you can't do that, then you've got to find ways of breaking down the low block when you're there. And for teams that play positional football like we do, that's moving the ball across the defence, trying to find a gap. You draw a team over to one side, switch play to the other, and then try and get in behind them. And unfortunately, that's where we are. That's what this system is going to do. And Arsenal have the same thing. Man City have the same thing. And the answer to that is getting better at it. And we're quite early in this process.
Getting better at it. That's where the courage. And Ricky, I know I always feel that we might be shutting you out in our.
No, I'm listening.
Okay, I mean, just to bring you into it. I mean, would you agree? And I'll direct this with you that really, once again, this is another one of those gut checks for our fans to understand the journey that we are on, to understand the journey that Ange is taking us on, to understand the club that he took on, what he's already managed to achieve. I mean, do you think it is really a simple case that people need to be more patient?
Well, I think you're asking a lot of people in the modern age, Steph, in the first place. That's a generalisation. But I think people very easily lose sight of what's in the rearview mirror. They don't know what's already gone past. That's almost like done. That's been, they don't realise them as achievements anymore because they're constantly wanting the next thing, the next thing. And of course, that tallies up with impatience. And that is just that is modern life really badly. I mean, you're only as good as your last result, people will say, and people will hold people to that kind of thing. In other words, they won't remember like results before or when we were playing brilliantly, earlier in the season and that kind of thing. But it's a journey. I mean, there might be micro things going on at the moment that affect that macro picture, the bigger picture that we all think about. But if people don't believe we're going in the right direction, then what are they actually expecting? Where are they actually expecting us to be right at this moment? Because if it's higher than like where we are now, then that's a massive over expectation.
Very well, very well stated. Especially when you look at what's above us.
And I think people are too, and I think they're jumping on Ange a bit because Ange will try and temper that all the time. But I think they're putting him in a kind of they're putting him in a kind of jam tomorrow bracket, aren't they? They're thinking that's how he's behaving now, kind of thing. Yeah. When he's but we are still only what are we? How far are we in with Ange? We're not even a full season in with Ange.
Nine months.
And all because this last bit's gone a bit wobbly and our results have been up and down, it doesn't mean that that makes us have a disastrous season. That doesn't mean we've had a bad season. It probably still looks like we'll be fourth or fifth, and that will be an excellent season, all told.
Yes.
And I think we can then build on that. I mean, there's some things that will come out of this season that we will need to change. But of course, that in itself is part of the process. You know what I mean? And Angie's realising all this himself at the same time. And I think people might criticise us defensively. I think I said this in our chat, but ironically, our five defenders, including Vicari, I wouldn't change for anyone. And we need to make that work. And why would we change those people? We might need some more backups and that kind of thing. But I think people, I don't really go on social media at all after we've lost. To be honest, I don't really go on there much after we've won. Now I just kind of, my own little football bubble and just like get on with other things I've got to get on with kind of thing. But, and I'll speak to you lot and we chat on that kind of thing. And I've got some other friends I chat with, but not much really, because sometimes it is just a little bit of tiring, you see, you know what I mean? If you go down those rabbit holes, I just don't want that. And it's not because I don't want to be told some truth, so I don't want to learn about it. It's just like, it's a really bizarre kind of way of absorbing like the fallout from everything. And I mean, that accounts for a lot of stuff in the world, to be honest, but you know.
I'm a bit like that. I think you kind of got to protect your mental health, haven't you? And like, for me personally, kind of being around really negative people, just I can't, it's not good for me. I can't deal with it. So I just avoid it, which is probably why I'd never guest on anyone else's podcast. I only do this one because I probably wouldn't last very long on any of the Spurs pods. I think, you know, kind of back to this, if we look at, well, actually, I mean, your point on defence, Ricky, you know, realistically, those first two goals, who are we pinning the blame on? What, Udogie, Van de Ven and Porro? Who, you know, when we come to do the end of season pods and we're talking about kind of, you know, like best young players or, you know, best signings or best performers over the seasons, all three of those players are going to be in that discussion. And
absolutely. You know, if they're not allowed a poor game once in a while, especially in context of where they've come from and where their careers are at right now, then what society have we become? What support base are we?
Yeah.
And it's a disgrace.
And I think more generally, if we talk about kind of, you know, that conversation around the progress and, you know, where we are and what we've got to, what we learn from this. I would say kind of three of our worst performances this season, say Newcastle, Fulham and Wolves are the kind of the ones that are jumping out on me. Maybe you'd put Everton in that group as well. But what you're looking at teams there who are, you know, very organised in defence. I think all of them have played a back five against us, which kind of means you've got a man on man against in our front line. You know, all of those have kind of stood off our front line, marked the central midfield so we can't play out from the back, and all of them have got very, very quick players who can hit us on the break and damage us. So if we're looking at a trend, I would say, you know, where we're vulnerable at the moment, it's that kind of profile. And if we're looking at, you know, how we want to improve for next season, it's kind of how do we mitigate against that? How do we protect ourselves against that?
I'm going to introduce a favourite word of mine from this season. I haven't used it for a while. I'm going to posit a question to both of you. You know, Timo Werner has been coming in for...
You did a little posit before we recorded, didn't you?
Oh, brilliant. I'm back in the posit chair, yeah.
Not a deposit, positively a posit, positing.
Yeah. But, I mean, poor old Timo Werner has been getting... Timo Werner is just... He's a lightning rod for criticism, right? I mean, he just is, yeah. He just has been getting... I personally think a lot of it is very unfair. But by the by, once again, this week, we saw a couple of great chances. Brendan Johnson's put a couple of great balls across. Can I ask you this? In a game like Newcastle, where you've got Dan Burn and Fabian Schär, you're clearly crying out for a Richarlison to be an option at the very least in that situation. Are we looking for our centre forward or our forward to be, you know, in the mix for those balls from either side as well? I mean, it shouldn't always just be Johnson to Werner, Werner to Johnson. We do want a forward in there. Are we getting the best use of Sonny right now? I mean, to your point, Milo, Jürgen Klinsmann has absolutely flogged this poor guy to within an inch of his life. I mean, everyone says, oh, you're not in Europe. You haven't been in many cups. Well, Sonny's done... I mean, I'd love to see Sonny's frequent flyer miles. They must be spectacular. Minutes on the pitch.
Well, he's done enough to earn me some coffee, Steph, so...
He certainly has, hasn't he? Yes. Which, by the way, I still have to send you before the season ends. And I haven't forgotten that I must be held accountable to that bet. I will not be someone who welches on their bet. So I need to get that to you. Thank you. £2. Yeah. I think you owe me one as well, though.
I owe you one. You owe me two.
You £2, you send me one. Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. Yeah. Who, by the way, did come back and play football. My word. Anyway. He played. He played for...
Yeah, no,
for
he has Huddersfield. To. No, you were saying about Sonny. Should we...
Yes,
should
I
we
was. Keep I me mean, on track. I, yeah, what do you no, think? I mean, are I, we, what do we do? What do we do here? Because we're in a situation where I think of Arsenal, I think of those centre-backs. You know, do we go back to playing Timo Werner off the bench as an impact sub? Do we play Sonny on the left? Do we play Richarlison as a centre-forward? What do you each think?
I mean, I think... Yeah, Sonny's had to play more over the last few weeks because Richarlison's been injured, so there's been less opportunity to play him. I think Son's always been a bit of a streaky player, and I think as a centre forward, he suits a team where there's space to run into behind more than he does a low block, particularly when you've got very, very physical centre halves. That said, I still think he should be able to, you know, get in between the centre halves when there's balls put in behind. But I also think there's, we talk about, you know, Werner, for instance, you know, Steph, we were talking about his performance last weekend against Forest. And, you know, I know that in the second half of that game, you were, you pretty close to him, weren't you? And he was, he was right in front of you. You're really impressed with, you know, his performance from, you know, from that, you know, when you, you know, when you're up close and personal with him. You, the Atuba view, I think we've called it, haven't we? When you're right pitch side and you can really admire, really admire the player. So, you know, I think, you know, a really good game against Forest, you know, less effective in this game. You know, that's going to happen. You know, realistically, you know, when we talked about the selection at the beginning, probably the only other selection that any of us could have, you know, would have made possibly is whether Deki starts in place of either Johnson or Werner, really is the only other change in the starting lineup we could have had other than, Bentancur and Saar, I think. So yeah, I, you know, I don't think we should be panicking about this. I'm sure Ange won't be panicking about this. No. You know, once Richarlison's fit, I'm sure he'll get more minutes. But bizarrely, you know, the, with Arsenal next up, that probably is a game where Sonny is useful because there will be more space to attack and, you know, we will be able to get in behind them. So, you know, probably you do want our speed merchants in that game.
I think, I mean, with Richie being out, it does make our kind of forward options a little bit tricky because, I mean, unfortunately, Richie obviously became injured or whatever after a really hot streak of form. He filled that centre forward role exactly how we'd want someone to. I mean, I feel a bit sorry for Son because him with...
I agree.
With his back to goal and facing play and balls being played into him, that is really is the worst part of his game. And but he's being asked to play that. He's being asked to do that. He's being asked to play that. Well, I mean, we've watched some for years, so we know his best moves, as Milo said, he's been played in behind, either down the channels or on that kind of rebound pass where he's like Kane used to slot him through, or cutting him from the left or right and curling it in the top corner. That's the other thing we know he can do very well. But usually that's from when he's wider, and of course cutting in from wide is not what Angie's going to want you to do if you play that kind of system here. And that's obviously what Deki's problem is, I think. And we have got a problem with Deki, what we're going to do with him. And because we're then thinking Son can't play left, we're quite lucky that Werner's turned up as a really good loan. And I think Werner plays that role really well. I mean, he understands the game. He takes on the structure where he's fitted in so well, so quickly. And he'll listen to Ange and says, stay out wide. I'll stay out wide. And I'll just do what? Receive the ball. Take my man
on
sometimes.
That's what I noticed. He plays absolutely to instruction. He does not fucking move from that spot. I mean, he is there. That 100%. I mean, but more than any other player, I think, in our system, he absolutely sticks to within like 2 yards of what he's been told to do.
Evidently, Ange kept shouting at Johnson to stick on the byline in the game yesterday as well. So, you know, it's clearly what he's after.
That's why Werner's been such a good loan, because of that. I mean, I agree with what other people say. I mean, if you give someone a golden chance to save your life, you're not going to be choosing him, are you? Because he still doesn't really look confident when he has a good chance. And that's just, I think that's the way he is. I don't think he's going to change his age. He's not going to become a prolific goal scorer. But so whether that then means he's a stopgap long term, I don't know. But it's almost like people then saying, well, but we have to have some fitting in somewhere if Sonny doesn't play. So does Sonny then play on the left when Richie comes back? But then we're saying Sonny's not as effective there. I mean, Sonny's had probably... He had that good game on the left against Newcastle where he really tore Trippier apart. Do you remember?
A knackered
but
Trippier.
Maybe that's... Pardon?
A really tired Trippier.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He was tired and he looked like he was really... And maybe Sonny even said, I'll play against Trippier in training when he was at Tottenham and I used to just roast him all the time. So just play me out against him. So maybe that's what happened. But we know Son isn't 100% reliable as the kind of dazzly winger anymore. So, but then you say you have to play him because his finishing's so good. But... He's not really playing a role at the moment where he's getting many chances to finish chances full stop. So it's just a little bit of a, you know, it's a bit clunky up there.
I think that the problem with him on the left is that he doesn't want to stick to the line.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, his strength on the wing is drifting in, and then the system doesn't work because it becomes easier to defend against. I mean, I think on Werner, I think signing him in the summer is a no-brainer. I think, you know, I know his wages are high. Although I'm sure that we won't be signing him on the same terms as he's on at Leipzig. And, you know, but the transfer fee is very low. And I think his experience in Europe next year will be really, really useful. But I think also, you know, when we talk about this, you kind of, where are we in the journey? You know, part of this is around improving the squad. And I don't think Werner comes in as a first choice starter. He comes in as a squad player who can play across the front line and is really useful to have. And, you know, as you said, Steph, is an impact sub. And I think, you know, when we look at this summer, you know, ideally that our current bench players move out We sell off most of those, and we bring in players who can improve the first 11. So I think, you know, some of those who are starting at the moment who, you know, wouldn't be starting at the top three clubs, you know, and you're probably going to have Johnson in that. You're probably going to have Werner in that. You know, there's a few others there who probably wouldn't be starting or, you know, need competition because there isn't any real viable alternatives for those positions. That's where we strengthen. Those players go to the bench, and we've uplifted the quality of the squad. And I think that's where we are in this process. And just kind of briefly on this, I was looking back at Arsenal. So when Arteta was in, when he first joined them, and so he joined them at the same time as Mourinho joined us, wasn't it? It was December 2019. So following season, if you look at a year in, well, actually a bit more than that. I've got one here from May 21. So what's that? 15 months later? No, a bit more than that, isn't it? So you've got, they had a game, they actually at Newcastle, they won this one 2-0, but they've got Ryan in goal, and it's Xhaka at left back, Gabriel, David Luiz, Bellerin, Cabellos, Elneny, Martinelli, Odegaard, Willian, and then Aubameyang up front. You look at that squad and you think, well, that's a year in, and the kind of how much it's changed since then. And I think, you know, I don't think you can say, oh, kind of Arsenal were on this trajectory, you know, ours is going to be the same. Of course, that's a nonsense. But actually what you can say is that, you know, he came in there when they were at a low ebb. He's rebuilt it. He's got investment. You know, he's significantly changed that side. But the team that he had a year later, which is kind of, you know, after a couple of transfer windows, which is where we are currently, bears no resemblance to the team that you know, they've had out over the last couple of seasons, you know, particularly this season. And I'm sure we will see similar churn in two, you know, if Ange is here for three or four seasons, I'm sure the season we see in, you know, the team we see in two seasons' time or three seasons' time will bear very, very little resemblance to the one we're seeing out there now, because we'll just have that churn. We'll have new players coming in.
Yeah, I think, I agree with all of that. I think going back to Sonny as well through the centre a little bit, I think, you know, looking back through the team, this is where when we're slightly slower on our play, when we're slightly slower pushing the ball forward, when Madders takes maybe two or three touches more than he was earlier in the season, I think it kills Sonny when he's in the middle, especially in these situations, because it's got to be a little quicker for him. And in the end, he gets frustrated, and it's all part of the journey, as you said. It's never just one person. There's elements, and everything is connected.
I mean, I think on Maddison, you know, what we're seeing less of him at the moment is that that three ball behind, which he was doing quite a lot early on the season, and he was linking up quite well with Sonny, and we're not really seeing that too much at the moment. I mean, I think even with slow build up, if we've got a low block, I think Sonny still should be able to have a little burst of speed over a short period of time. If we can work it and we can get in behind and we can put balls in behind, he ought to be able to make that run and read it and just get a foot to it or get a toe to it and put it in.
But I mean, I think we'd all agree yesterday. I mean, my word. I mean, he literally had Burn and Sharp right up his arse, and he's not a back-to-goal player. I mean, I think even Richie would have had a hard time holding up against those two. I mean, he was just getting
I'm not talking about back-to-goal plays, Steph. I'm talking about the complete opposite of that. I'm saying that, you know, what we want is him facing goal and us working opportunities that are across the box that he can try and get a toe to. And I think he can do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously he's better suited to a game where there's space to run into. And I do think with him as captain, I think he's been a really good captain for us. And I think he's been so much of what's gone right this season is, you know, he has a hand in. But I do think it means that, you know, when he's fit, he's likely to start, and that kind of hampers our options because he doesn't really suit playing on the left, as we said, and that means it limits opportunities for Richie. And
it's an interesting dimension to the conversation, isn't it? And I mean, again, for everything you said, I mean, nobody's knocking. He's brilliant. How can you knock Sonny? But it's system versus form versus function. I mean, so many things.
I mean, I think in the low block play, I think rather him come in to try and get involved in playing some kind of wall ball pass or knocking it around one touch with someone else, because I just don't think he likes that. I mean, there are still, even with low blocks, those little channel balls. I mean, you see, dare to mention it, but you see Odegaard play like Saka in sometimes or Ben White. It's that little blind pass where you just slot someone in and then they're...
That's the hesitancy that I think Ange is talking about now. It's like, hey, let's be a little braver.
I mean, if you watch back yesterday when Newcastle retreated, we're so two-touch. We're so two-touch all the time. And I think I said before, when the low block actually works for us, if you're one-touch, because your passes are shorter, and then if you pass it to someone else, by the time the defenders turn their head, the next person's passed it to someone else. If you watch Palace's goal today against Liverpool, I think it was their goal, I think. Mm-hmm. Honestly, they just one-touched it, but not even very complicated, but it was enough. No. At speed to just get through Liverpool, and I don't know whether that's because we're not practicing much.
I know you've got your hand in the air. I've just got to say this because otherwise I'll get lost in the contest. By the way, we did produce a move like that, and unfortunately, twice we did, and Timo couldn't execute. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one exception to that when we talk about Sonny dropping deep is when he's being man-marked, and we have seen this in weeks. Yeah, if you've got a central defender who's following everywhere, him dropping down the pitch and pulling someone with him creates space for other players to attack, and as long as someone else goes into that space, that's fine.
That's fair enough, yeah.
And,
so
you know, we are
is this the moment
that.
To get into that discussion? Is this the moment to bring it up? I know you wanted to bring it up a little later, but I think I'm going to go for it, and you can rearrange it if you want. Within 5 minutes of the game starting, Fabian Schär had galloped 40, 50 yards to try and
rearrange Sonny.
Yeah, to hack Sonny down for nothing. I mean, I've never seen less intent to play a ball in a football match. Well, a little bit of an exaggeration, but it was a yellow card all fucking day. Didn't happen. It's permission. It's permission to do that. And that's got to be, I mean, we've seen that so many times this season, you know, and Sonny's seen it so many times. And I think when you're a team that plays the way we are, you know, you need that protection to play football.
We're the most fouled team in the Premier League. So the stats on fouls against us, we're the most fouled team in the Premier League. We've had one penalty all season. You know, it's... We've got the most box entries of, I think, well, certainly any club in the Premier League. I think we're up there in Europe. And again, you know, one penalty all season. And I do think, you know, when you talk about that kind of the share foul on Sonny yesterday, you know, happening early in the game, it's nonsense that, you know, you get a free kick in the first 5 minutes of a game or something like that. A foul's a foul, doesn't matter when it happens. And if you let it go, then, I mean, firstly, there's an inconsistency there. But also, you know, it disadvantages the more attacking team because you're seeing players getting taken out. And, you know, we've seen, you know, Maddison, we lost for, what, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it was, you know, effectively because he was getting tap tackles on the ankle every time he got the ball. And I think, you know, when you talk about his form at the moment, I don't know what his ankles are like. But again, if they're not... Yeah, if he's not confident in them, you know, and a lot of his play early in the season was around kind of, you know, rolling, you know, or turning on very tight, you know, very tight circles, which he's not doing quite so much. You know, he hasn't quite got that fluidity. If he's not got that confidence in his ankles, or he's playing through pain, you know, he might be having painkilling injections for all we know, or, you know, anything like that. We're speculating. But, you know, if he's playing through that, you know, that might be a reason why we're not quite seeing him in the same form as we saw him in the season.
I think it's, you know. You know my feelings on this. I agree 100%. I think it's, you know, all part of it. Yeah.
You know, if we talk about the second goal yesterday where kind of Porro does that kind of blind lob into central defence, where I assume he thought that Romero's being there was there. But Ange said that he was carrying... He felt a twinge in the first half, which, you know, he ended up having to go off for. And evidently, I didn't see it myself, but I think Andy Gold said that there were points in the first half where he was telling the team not to pass to him.
Yeah.
As a result of this, you know, maybe again he was thinking, I'm going to clear it because I don't want to do a one-on-one challenge or with my thigh like this.
That's what I thought.
And, you know, and in which case, you know, obviously the end result is awful, but it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because, you know, you should be trying to clear the danger. And
I think it's a massive factor throughout. And to your point about, you know, Sonny dropping deep, bringing someone with him, creating space in behind, you know, Fabian Schär gets the yellow card he should have in the first 5 minutes. That somewhat alters Newcastle's game plan. You know, if Dan Byrne gets the yellow card he should have got 10 minutes later for tugging Sonny's shirt when he's breaking away, you know, that changes their game plan. But of course, when referees don't clamp down with this ludicrous, we want to let the game flow until we suddenly decide that we're not going to let it flow, you know,
we book someone for throwing away the ball or something like that, or answering back rather than the fouls that have actually been going on beforehand.
Well, you brought up a great point about high boots in yesterday's game.
Yeah. So you've got the, where are we? So you've got Dan Byrne again with a high boot on Benton Kerr in the penalty box towards the end of the first half. Which he got nothing for. And then Madison got booked for a high boot on Murphy in the second half, which, I mean, neither of them, I mean, Benton Kerr was trying to get his head to a ball when he was kicked. You know, neither of them were on the head, but both were high. And I think the Byrne one on Benton Kerr was higher than Madison's on Murphy. I mean, there might be a reason for that because Byrne's about a foot taller than Madison. But, you know, it's you've got two comparable challenges. One is in the box. The other one isn't. One is higher than the other one. And the one that was higher doesn't get a yellow card. And, you know, the one on Murphy does. It's puzzling.
Yeah, that's a polite word for it. But, you know, I think this is all, I mean, it's all part, and again, it's part of the, you know, I suppose this is part of learning. We're going to have to play through this, and we're going to have to learn to play through these moments and just understand that this is, when we play the sort of football we play, you know, this is going to happen. But it's tough. I think it does have an impact. 100%, you know, so many details. I mean, already, I hope that all of you are listening can hear. I don't think it was a 4-0 game yesterday. I mean, it was, but it wasn't. I think it was a game of details that didn't quite go the way we wanted them to, and then we lost our way. And I think we're pointing that out. I mean, I think we're putting forward a pretty compelling case. Anyway, I mean, is it unrealistic, you know, for people to expect this to be fixed by the end of the season? I mean, you know, it is, isn't it? That's the conclusion we're coming to.
Yeah, I mean, do you mean unrealistic for it to be expected by the end of this season, or is it unrealistic to be fixed in one season?
Either way, you pick your poison. Let's say in one season. I mean, this is going to take a couple of seasons at least.
I think if you went out and did a survey of our fan base about, you know, at the end of last season, about where they thought we would be in a year's time, and what was their best case scenario, I suspect that even the most optimistic of us, and there's probably, you know, there's three of those in this room right now, probably. But, you know, I think at the end of last season, if you'd said, you know, competing for a Champions League place, you would have said, you would have bitten your arm off. And I think most of us would have said, well, actually, this is a pretty big job, and it's going to take us a little while to kind of work through this and clear out the players who aren't up to it and bring in ones that are and sort through this. And I think, you know, I think even in the summer, a lot of people were saying, well, actually, you know, just playing some good football this season will be enough. And, you know, damn the league. You know, we need a couple of summers to sort this out. And I think those same people now, or some of those same people now, are saying, well, actually, you know, this isn't where we should be. We ought to be able to sort this out. We, you know, we ought to be good enough to beat Newcastle away, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, as you said, Ricky, you know, there's kind of no rear mirror. I can't remember what you said before. Can't remember the kind of previous opinions, but it's important to kind of think about that. And, you know, it's important to kind of remember where we were a year ago and where we thought we'd be. And in answer to the question, no, of course it was never going to get sorted out in one season. I think we're in a far better place. I think most of us would say that the players that came in last summer were, you know, a big improvement, and most of them have performed really well this season. And, you know, we need another summer like we had last summer to further improve the squad, and probably another one after that. And then we can start talking about whether we, you know, where we are in terms of, you know, compared to, you know, Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool and, you know, whoever else is up and around there at that time.
Yeah, I think I made a pledge at the start of the season that I would, and this was, and the reason I made this pledge was because fresh in my memory was what the pre-incarnation of Tottenham was, as in our last regime. And the reason I made that pledge was to say that I won't moan at Ange for the whole of the season. I'm just going to give him a complete free pass for the whole of the season. And what that pledge then reminds me of is every time I might think of being negative, it reminds me of what went on last season. And if you can keep refreshing that in your mind, it then gives you some perspective to see where we are, regardless of whether this season's gone up and down a little bit wonky at times, and we have some issues, like we have some micro issues that we could discuss, but we're all hoping, are just things that will be ironed out as we go along. And I just don't think it's worthy of, I don't know. I mean, if you, I don't know what's to gain from going in two-footed on the manager or what's going on really at the moment.
Well,
because we're hoping things are falling in place. It seems like many things at the club overall seem like they're falling in place, and we just need to kind of like, you know, not derail that as a loud voice from the South Stand, let's say, or the East Stand or the West Stand or whatever.
They most certainly are. But what I think people as well, I feel that a lot of our fan base who are complaining right now need to understand is that when you looked at our house last summer, probably all you saw was shit paint job, you know, windows are cracked. And you know, the doors could do with replacing. It generally looks really shabby and kind of cold and unhappy. But what nobody recognises is that the actual foundations, I mean, there were termites for days. I mean, the foundations were rotten. The things you couldn't see, the things that no fan could see in our football club were not right. They were wrong. Very, very fucking wrong. And he has not only come in and given us a nice fresh lick of paint and all that business, he has forced the club to upgrade their foundations, and that's irrefutable. We have checked the foundations are solid and happy. That's the work that people don't see that's been done, but it's real.
No, absolutely. If you think about kind of Conte and I mean, we spoke about it enough, didn't we, kind of that poisonous atmosphere that there was at points
spreads
last season
everywhere.
And you know, the way he was calling out, treating the players, and just really, really, really toxic. And I think you're right about Ange. You know, I think everything we hear out of the training ground, everything we hear about the club is very, very positive about how he is there. You know, the impact he's had. You know, you can. The club looks like it's all pulling in the same direction for once.
Yes.
The first time in a long time. And
in a long time. That's the emphasis.
And in several years. And I think longer than that. You're probably going back at close to a decade, really.
End of Poch days.
Well, no, I'd say the beginning and middle period of Poch days, because the end of Poch days weren't particularly happy coherent or joined up either. But I think the important work there, and I'm probably just repeating what you said, Steph, but the important work there is the foundations, is the work that's invisible to us. It's not necessarily what's happening on the pitch. It's actually creating an environment where people can grow, where people can support, can thrive, they can support each other. And when new players come in, that, they can find their feet and they can express themselves. And that, some of that work we probably won't see for a while. I think we can see some of it, but I think the full extent of it we won't see for a while. And
you've
got to give that time.
Well, and also people have to accept that it was there to be done and it's been done. And just because they can't see it, it doesn't mean it hasn't happened. So, I think we're all in conclusive agreement that, whatever the situation at St. James's Park, it is but a mere, blip on a journey that is moving in a very progressive fashion and is bringing us, ever closer to what Ange sees for us. And, you're either in or you're out. If you think that he's got to have plan Bs and Cs and Ds, as we keep on telling you on this pod, you're kidding yourselves. Like, he wants us to be the best plan A that we can be. And, we're at that point in the gym, as we said earlier, where it hurts. And you're like, I'm not seeing the washboard stomach I want and the biceps, but they're coming. Stick with it and push through it. I think that's what we're kind of getting to.
I like this week's analogy, Steph.
Thank you.
This week's analogy. I like that one. No, I did. I was going to say that earlier, but I'm glad you've returned to it so I could put that in.
Yeah, by the way, being someone who goes to the gym regularly and has pushed through pain barriers, I'd like to make it clear I still have the opposite of a washboard stomach. That's all right. I feel good about it. So what did you think of Newcastle, chaps?
I mean, they executed their game plan excellently. It's, it's not what I'd want to, how I'd want us to play. It's not dissimilar actually to what we were complaining about last season, or, parts of it. I mean, it was interesting. I saw the passing maps and average position maps that you get produced after games, and ours is, very symmetrical, thick lines, lots of passing around, blah, 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 blah. Newcastle's has got about four lines on it. And there's virtually no build-up pattern there. It's, get the ball, hit it long, chase it. Wow. And, it worked excellently. It works because in, particularly in Gordon and Isaac, they've got two very, very, very good, quick players who, you know, can chase that stuff all day. And you know, we just really struggle with it. So, you know, I'm not, that sounds a bit disparaging, doesn't it? But I think they had the perfect day from their point of view in terms of, you know, applying the tactics they went into the game. It worked perfectly for them.
Yeah.
I think one thing we can't underestimate, they've got some severe injury lists and they've had it most of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
So fair play to them to do that. And I think what they probably did, I think they said that they changed their tactics to play man for man. But the other thing they did was play to their strength, which was basically to get it forward to their three. And if I'm honest, I would, this is a bit controversial, I would swap their front three for our front three for this team. I'd quite happily do that, I think. I think Gordon's a great player. I think Isaac's absolutely excellent forward and the right age, and Barnes is good, maybe not, you know, but he's, I don't know, I wouldn't not fancy him any more than Werner, I don't think, but I would, yeah, I'd swap them. And I thought they were excellent the other day. The amount of work they get through is fantastic. I think they've had a funny old season, Newcastle, and I think that's probably down to the injuries and the strain of, they thought it was onwards and upwards once they got the Champions League last year. And I think Ange just referred to that. It's not always, as we were just saying there, it's not a straight line always. It's not like you're in the Champions League and then all of a sudden you're at the top table, and they well and truly got knocked out of that early. So, I'm not sure what position they're in overall when it comes to how they can progress now, because I'm not sure how they feel about Eddie Howe. I'm not sure what their financial situation is or any of that. But one thing they will always give you is a good old energetic game at St James's Park, because I think the crowd demand it. So, yeah. But I think they've had terrible away form, I think.
They are in trouble with PSR. They are in trouble with PSR, so they might be forced to sell some players this summer if they want to bring anyone in.
Oh, really?
Just coming back on their front three, and you know how you'd sort them for ours. I would question that with our tactics, because I don't think Isaac, you know, Isaac is a fantastic striker on the break. And, you know, again, he's one that kind of likes to go out and in, which doesn't really work with how we're playing. And Gordon, no, less advanced, but Gordon isn't really a touchline hugger either. So I think they're fantastic players. I think they're absolutely perfect for this system. I fancied both Gordon and Isaac when we had Conte, because we were playing on the break. And I think they would have been really good fits for that, yeah. but for this system, I don't think so. But that's not taking anything away from them. They're really good players.
I think you've both said it very well. I don't have much to add really on what you said about Newcastle. I think Eddie Howe's a much better manager than people give him credit for. I think what you said about the injury list is absolutely spot on. I do think Southgate moves on. I think England will make a move for Eddie Howe myself. I think he'd be a very good national team manager. It just depends whether he wants to do that at this stage of his career. The player at Newcastle have that I'd really like in our squad. Now, ask me where he'd fit, and we'll get to that problem later when we have loads more games, but I wouldn't mind Bruno Guimaraes. I do like him. I think he's a really good player. I think he's got the perfect attitude. I think he's got a lot of bite. He's got a lot of talent, a lot of skill. I really like him. So he's always someone I do not look forward to playing against. Let me just say
that. Him and Romero on the same team. Oh, that should be fun, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, I think actually, you know, we're talking about a bit more bite. You know, I think we probably do need a bit more bite. And when we're talking about kind of that improvement, I think probably, you know, we were touching on this earlier on. I think probably another area we probably need to look at is getting a bit more height in the team. You know, I mean, Mickey's pretty big, but he's not really aerially dominating. You know, I think a lot of our problems at set pieces at the moment, you know, particularly against Newcastle, who are quite a big team, is that we're not. And
well, Brendan Johnson trying to compete with Dan Bird. He did a noble job, but it was quite funny.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I don't, I'm not quite sure where we can get height into the team. Probably central midfield, because, you know, as you said, we don't really want to change our back five. Yeah. But I think we probably could do, where we really are missing Kane, actually, he was probably our most reliable set-piece defender in the box. Yeah. You know, the amount he headed away. I know kind of every other fan thinks that we need to replace Kane up front. I think we need to replace Kane in defence. That's my hot take of the week.
I suppose Richie would help with that, wouldn't he? Because he's not too bad sometimes, aerially, when he comes back. But yeah, you're right. I'm not quite sure where we'd squeeze other people in, really.
Anyway, but with yeah, so with Newcastle, look, I do think when they've got a fully fit squad, and you know, if Eddie Howe remains manager, I you know, you can't discount them for being for they'll be in and around the top 6-7 again next season for sure. I think there's no two ways about it. One positive and one negative, chaps.
So I think my positive is that's probably our last outing in Torp Hayes, so we don't need to see that again. My negative is, I think it's everyone throwing their toys out of the pram. I think it is that kind of overreaction to results at the moment. And yeah, I think we've got to hold our nerve.
I'm going to slightly cheat here. My one positive is the ladies reaching a cup final. That's allowed, isn't it?
Fantastic. Surely. Yeah, that's definitely allowed. Yes.
So I can't think about shells, but that is a massive positive. And the negative, I think it's just, I'm feeling a bit, the only kind of a micro worry is I think we just lose a bit of confidence when we concede. And I think we touched on that the other week, didn't we? What was the game? I think you said, Milo, we concede and it seemed to sort of just take the edge off us slightly. In other words,
was it the West Ham confidence. Game?
Pardon?
Was it the West Ham game?
The West Ham game, yeah. And I felt that was a bit, I mean, obviously we're letting two goals in very quick succession, so that's going to knock anyone's confidence. But as I say, we were rolling okay up to that moment, and it just was a bit annoying that happened. But I don't want it to be, what I'd normally do is put that in the kind of, it's kind of the scratchy chin emoji envelope, I think, where you think, keep an eye on that one, because, you know, if that starts happening regularly, then I'll start having slight worries about...
The scratchy chin emoji envelope. I'm going to look
rubby
for
chin,
when
you know,
we stop
when we go,
recording. I know, I'm going to see, is there one of those emojis on our phones? I have to look, you see.
That one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to look for that. Oh, that one. You're right. Yeah, I've got to start using that.
You know, pondering kind of like, what's pondering. All that about kind of, what's all that about kind of emoji kind of thing.
Yes, I like a bit of a ponder myself. I should use that emoji more. I'm going to be even more controversial than you, actually, because your positive was great. I mean, you're right. But my positive was that when I watched the game back in the second half, in the last 10 minutes, we were still trying to play football. And I will say that to me is a clear sign that the problems we're going through are of growth, not of belief. There's a little bit of belief involved, but generally speaking, it shows you that people are committed. Mm-hmm. We didn't hide. We didn't stop trying to play football. Whatever your thoughts on that, they look like they are still, you know, they were still trying to get in, you know, still trying to do stuff, which you know, fair credit. I've got a couple of negatives here. I do think, but again, couched in the sense of we're growing, it is a bit of a negative that we're tentative still and you know, maybe a little less purposeful with our forward passage. That's a little bit of a negative. But really, I suppose the biggest negative I have to come for is if after five fucking minutes, a defender who's come 45 yards and absolutely clattered your striker in the middle of his own half does not get a yellow card, and then 5 minutes later, you do not give a yellow card to the other central defender for pulling someone back on the break, then how the hell are you meant to... But what the hell does that tell you? What sort of message does that send? And so, again, inconsistent refereeing. Absolutely. It happened so many times yesterday, and it got overshadowed because we weren't quite ourselves. But it's an important detail, and they've got to get it right. Sorry, they have to. So
there was a lot of shirt pulling in that game.
A lot of shirt pulling. Yeah. Just be consistent. Anyway, I will just say as well, because you did bring up West Ham briefly. I've just got to say, because I didn't get the chance to say this in my absolutely anemic recording that I dropped into that West Ham pod, which, by the way, is because we were surrounded by West Ham fans, and I couldn't actually tell you all that is the worst place I've ever watched a football match in my fucking life. An absolute shithole. I mean, I've never been to a football match with less atmosphere, let alone a derby. My God. Anyway. Rant over. You want to take the week that was on?
I will do, yes. So we finally got a date for our game against Manchester City, and that date is Tuesday the 14th of May. Kickoff is at 8 p.m. British summer time. This has left our remaining fixtures looking like this. So Sunday the 28th of April, Arsenal at home. Thursday, May the 2nd, Chelsea away. Sunday, May the 5th, Liverpool away. Saturday, May the 11th, Burnley at home. Tuesday, May the 14th, Manchester City at home. And Sunday, May the 19th, Sheffield United away. How do you feel about this, chaps? It feels like a tough run of games with Burnley, Sheffield United and Chelsea as some respite in between.
Well, it's slightly annoying that we've got a couple of midweek games there, considering we've probably played the minimum amount of games you could play in a season. So we got a couple of midweekers in there, and we knew that annoyingly, one was Chelsea away and one was Man City at home. It's always going to be tough games for us. I think Arsenal got 3 games before they even play us in that North London derby. So we've got plenty of time to prepare, but as we've seen this season, that might not be a good thing. We will think it's a good thing, and then we'll be annoyed if we aren't giving it full guns against them in that home game. But I don't know. I mean, I think there's almost a... We'll beat Burnley and Sheffield United, and what we get from the others, I don't know. But I think the 6 points from that will probably be enough to at least get us 5th. I still don't see anyone else catching us up for that place. So, you know, anything else on top of that is a bonus. But whether that gets us 4th, I don't know. It's just hard to predict at this stage. I think the... Where you are physically and emotionally at this stage of the season is more important than anything. And we've seen that from results now, because funny things happen at the end of the season, whether that, you know, you've got the view of the finish line in, you know, that's what happens to Arsenal, get the view of the finish line and they actually fall apart. And, you know, other teams, you know, going for, even Villa might get a bit of that. Who knows? You know what I mean?
We should keep on referring to this Arsenal game against Aston Villa today, because Aston Villa did to Arsenal what effectively Newcastle did to us yesterday, not necessarily system-wise, but in the sense of they deployed a system specifically designed to stop, you know, Arsenal playing the way they like to play. What I look at when I see these fixtures is I don't see any of these teams necessarily setting up to stop us playing. Sure. The biggest fear I have for the North London derby is if he decides to do what he did at Man City, which, by the way, I think is the game that lost them the title, but that's for another discussion. I don't think they were brave enough. But if he does decide to sit in against us, that could be a tough afternoon. But if they go for it, and we go for it, I'm very confident. And I know this is going to sound strange. I'm very confident that we can, I think we, you know, maybe Man City we lose. It's wholly possible. And I know that people listening are going to be like, he's out of his fucking mind. It's wholly possible we will go undefeated for the rest of the season, because I don't see one team there who's going to set up like a Fulham or a Newcastle and just completely neutralise us.
And with the results this weekend, at least we don't have to worry about the Liverpool game now handing it to Arsenal.
Ah, very good.
So it doesn't matter now. Yeah.
I mean, that's with my optimistic head on, right? So, I mean, there is a practical side, right? I mean, you know, it's not going to be easy. But I think we do okay when it's not easy.
Let's move on. Semi-automated offside. So the Premier League has voted to introduce semi-automated offside technology from next season. It's going to be introduced from the autumn, missing the first few weeks, or actually months of the season. This is because the Premier League is going to stop using Hawkeye, is moving to a new supplier who will not be ready until August, and then there'll be a period for configuration and testing of SOAT. Get used to that, Steph. SOAT, before the introduction.
SOAT, surely.
SOAT. Sorry, yeah, there's a constantly saying that and getting it completely wrong. SOAT works by having 12 high-speed cameras on the stadium roof. These are not the standard television cameras, and they measure 29 points on a player's body and position, and uses this to create an AI model of the offside situation and sends an alert. So similar to we get with the goal line technology, sends an alert if there's a player in an offside position, which is then reviewed to check whether the player has an impact on play. SOAT removes the manual element of deciding where the ball is when it's been kicked and the position of the players. We get a clearer image of the offside decision, and we don't get the lines on the pitch that we're kind of used to, and people photograph and then share around social media trying to support their wild conspiracy theories and victimisation. It's also a lot quicker. SOAT was first used in the Champions League in the 22-23 season. It was used at the 22 World Cup. It was introduced in Serie A in January 2023. And La Liga have also announced that it'll be introducing it next season. You're laughing, Steph.
No, I was just laughing at the way you said Serie A. You always said it with it. Just Serie A.
Well, you know.
That's great. It's like... So, yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I know. I see it, and I'm James Richardson sipping a coffee in a piazza somewhere.
Lazio. Fucking, how brilliant was that? How brilliant was that?
Great.
Anyway, this is good news, isn't it?
Man, he did more for Serie A than anything, that guy, didn't he? He was a one-man marketing machine. Anyway, but back to SOAT. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes.
It is welcome. No, it is welcome. If I mean, it'll cut down on our pre-pod conversations about whether we can get into a VAR conversation. Oh, look, anything that makes it more efficient and accurate is fine. I mean, what I think the offside rule should be is a different kettle of fish. I'd like them to rewrite it. But, you know, in terms of applying the rules as they sit now, you're absolutely right. This is welcome.
You'd like them to rewrite it so Spurs are never offside and everyone else is.
Well, one like that, yeah. Why not? I wouldn't mind a bit of that. Yeah, that'd be good.
If
you're absolutely right. Anything that's efficient and takes
humanity out of these decisions. If you take the field in red, you're always offside. Is that?
Yeah, there you go. I think that's fair enough. You know,
if you're an Arsenal defending,
you're always on. Yeah.
I think wearing an Arsenal shirt ought to be bringing the game into disrepute and you get a yellow card.
Don't need Sayot to tell us that, do we?
Yeah.
See, we can come up with that rule. No, I agree. Anything that makes it more efficient is good. Yeah.
Ricky?
Yeah, it's the speed improvements for me. I think just watching them put those lines on the screen sometimes, they take absolutely fucking forever. And sometimes it's for decisions that aren't even, you could almost not put the lines on and say that you could call the decision. So I think anything like that that speeds the game up, and most of those decisions I think are literally line calls without, there's only a few that are either, I think, interference or whether a defender maybe intentionally played the ball or not when they, you know, when it goes off them.
Yeah.
It can even blow the whistle if they want with it as well, with the artificial intelligence, if it was up to me. And I think also, I'd also think that if they did, let's say, if they can just check the lines on like the byline and even the touch line, if they did that, I'd be quite happy to get rid of the rest of VAR. Anything that's like factual decisions, get that locked down. And then the rest, I'd rather just go back to normal refereeing, I think. I don't know. I mean, I quite liked VAR when it came in, but I don't know. There's something about it that's pissed me off, basically, I think.
It must really change the assistant referee's job. So if you're not looking at offsides at all,
yeah,
it kind of quite changes what they're doing. Yeah, and I think the other thing is, you say in terms of speeding it up, you're also not going to get that hunting around for the best camera angle because it's doing it all in real time, all of the time, and then it's going off the model that it's creating.
Yeah.
Yeah, one difference on this, I think at the World Cup, there was a chip in the football that gave it its position, whereas on this, the cameras are picking up the position of it, so it's not... There's not a chip in the ball, but
yeah.
Anything that makes me feel on review less like some weirdo football flat earther has got to be better, right? I mean, because I realise that sometimes I allow myself to get into the sinkhole of the lines drawn, and well, did they draw the line at the precise moment the ball was leaving the other foot, everything, and then you get sort of weirdly myopic and kind of, and then it becomes confirmation bias. Before you know it, you're in a wormhole, and then when you sit back, you're like, fucking hell! It's like you sound like someone who genuinely believes that the earth might be flat, and you kind of hate yourself for it. So if it can improve me as a human being,
I'd like is to give us the option of watching the AI model, and then, you know, maybe they'd all look like Tron or something like that. It'd just be really cool, I think, like. And you could choose your virtual background. That's
well, I think beyond the ones that need interpretation from the ref, it will get down to the same level as trust as what the goal line one does. In other words, you know, you just accept it because you just think AI is much smarter than all us. All the lines have been drawn in the right place. It can tell you, you know what I mean?
And to then, your point, that goal that wasn't against Luton, I don't think I've ever seen a clearer case of what you're talking about in terms of, okay, I trust the technology, because we were sitting in the upper east. And even from there, that ball looked fully over the line.
Yeah, it did.
And you just trust, because it didn't go bzzz or whatever to the ref, you trust, okay, they're not going to purposely stuff you.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
But also, you know, I think if you look at the Champions League this season, you know, how many calls can you think that were contentious or arguments over offside or decisions and stuff like that? I can't think of any. And I mean, I think they apply VAR better in the Champions League than they do in the Premier League as well. It's not as intrusive. But certainly, except in terms of
2019, I'll never stop going on about it.
Man. That wasn't VAR, was it? So
No, but they should have applied VAR and everything. They should have done everything. So there we go.
Anyway, you were talking about your flat earthers and what have you, and you managed to get back there. So let's kind of let that go. And should we just move on to thanks, chaps? That was fun.
All right. I've gone everywhere this evening. I slagged off West Ham. I got back to 2019. I fucking put myself in the same potential room as a flat earther and hated it. I'm not a flat earther. I think flat earthers are stupid, by the way. So anyway, you're right.
Thanks
chaps. I think that was fun. It was fun for me. I hope it was fun for you, my witterings. But anyway, no, I think it was really good. I think it's really important that when we have results like this, and it was a heavy defeat, but I think it's important to look at them in a wider context than just the 100-odd minutes of the game itself. And once again, I think we did that. I think we did that very well. So we've got no game next weekend, folks, but we're going to be back as normal to talk Spurs and football. We've got something good lined up.
Gareth's top 10 favourite lunchtime kickoffs, I think, is next weekend.
Ange made a reference this week, didn't he, to the lunchtime kickoff not being his favourite. He did make a slight reference to it.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. And I can't let a Newcastle pod go without mention of the mighty Timothy Atuba. You mentioned him already, Milo, but I just want to note, I will never forget that moment. I was there with my son at the time. What a lovely goal. Anyway, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.